And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Tuesday, feeling like a Monday, the 28th of May. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
And good Tuesday morning to you, Leslie. And not only is it Tuesday, but it's going to be feeling a little bit more like June out there across the Beehive State, thanks to temperatures that'll be coming in above our seasonal averages in Park City. Should be a pretty nice afternoon after a relatively cool start. We'll see a temperature eventually climb into the middle 70s in Park City by getting to 76 degrees while down in the Heber Valley. Likely see a daytime high in the low 80s. Through most of the day, we'll check in with mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. There is a little bit of moisture present. So as we get the daytime heating going, we create a little bit more instability in the atmosphere. There will be at least a slight chance that we could see an isolated shower or thunderstorm. If I had to put a percentage on it in Park City, roughly a 20% chance. So not all that likely, but not necessarily impossible either. So if you did have any plans to be outside during the course of the afternoon, just maybe keep a watchful eye on the sky just in case. But again, most of us will get through the day dry as our temperatures will be ranging about 10 degrees above average. The average high today in Park City, 66. And by getting to 76, that's a full 10 degrees above average. Tonight, we'll be checking in with partly cloudy skies with the overnight lows dropping to right around 50 degrees. So really not that cool tonight. But as we move into our Wednesday, there will be a weak front that moves in from the northwest. It's not going to really drop our temperatures, I'd say, by a significant amount, but it will drop us a decent amount as we go between Wednesday and Thursday. Tomorrow, we'll still top out in the low 70s, and we'll see a slight uptick in our wet weather potential. So instead of a 20% chance like we find this afternoon, tomorrow bring roughly a 30% chance as that daytime high again comes in the low 70s, as we'll likely see a daytime high in the upper 70s down in the Heber Valley. On night, the overnight low, about 10 degrees cooler compared to what we find tonight. We'll drop to 40 degrees. Then on Thursday, that temperature will briefly drop below our seasonal average by getting to 63 degrees, but under mostly sunny skies, still should be a pretty nice day across the Wasatch back. On Thursday night, the overnight low will drop to 42 degrees, and then as quickly as we cool things down between Wednesday and Thursday, we'll start to warm things right back up as we move into the beginning of the weekend. On Friday, we'll see a daytime high of 70 degrees, mostly sunny. We'll be around 50 degrees on Friday night. Then on Saturday, that daytime high will be right back to 76 degrees, so a little bit of a dip through the middle of the week, all to be kind of right back where we are right now going into our Saturday. There's a chance that another weak system could the northern half of the state between Sunday into Monday to allow temperatures to ease down slightly, but it looks like they would only ease back down to the low 70s. And then as we look a little bit further down the road, by the middle and second half of next week, we temperatures warm up even more as it looks like a dome of high pressure might take over the western United States. So all things considered, we'll be looking at a relatively warm and relatively dry patch of weather through the next 7 days. We'll just have that slight chance between today and tomorrow just as that weak front arrives tomorrow, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be talking with the founder of Progression and venture capitalist Ryan Bellissimo, discusses this year's Progression program that's happening in Park City here on June 13th. And finally, Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff with a monthly update, including a look at the coming summer season. Well, a hearing to decide if Camas mom Corey Richens is put on trial for killing her husband has been delayed indefinitely. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that she meets with her new attorneys this week.
A third district court judge on Friday canceled a planned hearing to decide whether the Camas mother of three will stand trial in connection with the March 2022 overdose death of her husband. Judge Richard Mrazek postponed the hearing indefinitely because the private attorneys who'd represented Corey Richens have left the case and been replaced with a pair of public defenders. The new team, Salt Lake City attorneys Kathy Nestor and Wendy Lewis, will need time to meet with Richens and look over the evidence. Here's Lewis.
I understand there are multiple terabytes of discovery.
Mrazek appointed Nestor and Lewis through a court order Thursday. Richens' previous attorneys withdrew May 20th after telling the judge there was a, quote, irreconcilable and non-waivable situation. Court records indicate former defense attorney Sky Lazaro told Mrazek that Richens was unable to continue to pay for her defense. Another hearing in the case is set for June 21st at 3 p.m. Summit County prosecutors charged Richens with aggravated murder, saying she poisoned her husband with fentanyl for financial gain and to leave the marriage. She's also charged with attempted murder for allegedly poisoning Eric Richens with a sandwich on Valentine's Day in 2022 as well. She faces 11 felony counts in all, including financial crimes. She went on to write a children's book about grieving called Are You With Me, which features her own family. Richens has maintained her innocence since the arrest. If she's tried and convicted of the charges, she could spend the rest of her life in jail. She's been in Summit County Jail without bond since May of 2023. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Almost 500 homes are under construction on property between Deer Valley's Eastern Terrain and the Jordan L Reservoir. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the neighborhood is one of numerous developments in MIDA's Wasatch County project area.
Called the Sky Ridge Development, about half of the planned 473 homes have already been released to the market. It also features a host of leisure amenities, including a clubhouse and equestrian barn, now being rebuilt after a fire last November, and a 9-hole golf course and driving range. Developers shared details about the construction with around 60 members of the public at an open house Thursday afternoon. It's one of numerous projects fueling rapid growth in Wasatch County, one of the fastest growing counties in the state, while neighboring Summit County's growth rate falters. The development is nearly 700 acres, about half of which is dedicated as open space. Sky Ridge owner and managing director Tyler Aldous praised the land during his presentation Thursday.
You don't find parcels that big across the street from an existing gondola at a major ski resort like Deer Valley.
Sky Ridge is working with both Wasatch County and the Military Installation Development Authority, or MIDA, to complete the project. The land sits in MIDA's Wasatch County project area. Aldous said MIDA helped fund the Jordan L Parkway for access to the new construction.
They have tools to help build infrastructure that utilizes future property taxes from new stuff being created. This road opened up the whole area, not just for us, but for all the other landowners.
The developers also touted the trails they're building for the neighborhood, including 5 miles of paved trails, 8 miles of soft surface terrain, and 2 miles designated for equestrian use only.
We started with our trail system before we started building roads.
The trails will connect to Deer Valley's trail network and to the existing rail trail along State Route 248, enabling access to Park City's Main Street. MIDA is at play in much of the development in northern Wasatch County, including the Deer Valley expansion set to more than double the size of the resort. 9 of the 10 lifts planned for the new terrain lie within MIDA's project area. And new condos, single-family homes, and at least 5 hotels in the area also require the MIDA Development Review Committee stamp of approval, including a Grand Hyatt with rooms set aside for veterans and active duty members of the military. MIDA's Military Recreation Facility project area in Wasatch County was originally designated to provide members of the military with recreation and wellness opportunities. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, Park City's Recreation Department is stepping in to manage court time at City Park this summer. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has details.
Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher said they've historically had a hands-off approach towards the 3 tennis courts located next to the City Park field.
Like a lot of communities, if you come and the courts are being used, you need to wait an hour, and then the person that's on there needs to give up that court to you. What we found is that the pickleball players are coming in the morning on certain days, really through the pickleball club, and they've been great to work with, and they said, hey, we'll give up a court if a tennis player comes, but it's very intimidating, I think, for a tennis player to ask, you know, 40, 50 pickleball players to give up a court.
To make things easier, Fisher said the city is adopting a new rule starting in June to manage the court time from 8 a.m. to noon. On even calendar days, the morning court time will be for tennis players. On odd days, it's designated for pickleball. The courts will remain unregulated after noon each day. Last week, the Park City Council expressed support for finding a private sector partner to build a new pickleball facility in an effort to create more places to play the rapidly growing sport. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And the nonprofit Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History will feature dueling pianos at its annual fundraiser this week. The mission of Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History is to preserve and restore the historical mining structures in Park City. The nonprofit's current focus is restoring the Silver King and Thanes mines, both of which have suffered recent damage. To raise money for the projects, Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History will host its annual fundraiser at the Pendry Hotel May 29th. Titled Music for the Mines, the evening will involve dueling pianos featuring local musician Rich Wyman. Nonprofit member Betsy Wallace explains.
He puts on this interactive show, which is including dancing and laughing, but basically how it works is the audience has the ability to bid for songs. Oh. And it's all controlled by Rich. And, you know, Rich is just this awesome showman, so it should just be a blast. And the way it works is you bid your song, and if you win that bid, he starts to play it, that the Killer Keys start to play it. And then through the song, if somebody wants to try to outbid it, they'll take another bid and start again.
Table packages have sold out, but individual tickets starting at $200 remain. You can find out more information about the event and Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History online at kpcw.org. Park City's chapter of the American Legion hosted a ceremony at the city cemetery yesterday. KPCW's Connor Thomas was there and has this report.
A field of small flags fluttered in the breeze as a crowd of over 100 gathered at Park City Cemetery Monday morning to remember America's fallen soldiers. Attendees young and old stood reverent as the Park City Troublemakers gave a cappella renditions of Danny Boy and Amazing Grace, among other tunes. Keynote speaker, Navy veteran, and current city emergency manager Mike McComb said he's standing on the shoulders of giants. During a speech, he recalled the sacrifices of the greatest generation and the importance of heroism.
Many received a gold star they neither wanted, needed, nor deserved.
His words hit home for local businessman Rory Murphy, a former paratrooper in the Army's 82nd Airborne. His late brother and father were both career soldiers, and his uncle lost his life in World War II.
And it's great to see so many veterans out here, and, you know, I enjoyed myself. It was, it's really, feels very good to see this much appreciation in this town.
In all, his family has 14 blue stars and 2 gold stars. A color guard from the Summit County Sheriff's Office presented the flag Monday, and the sheriff's mounted posse processed in and out with a riderless horse, a tradition to memorialize fallen comrades. Park City High School band director Chris Taylor concluded the ceremony with taps, the customary bugle call at United States Armed Forces funerals. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, a steward of Memorial Hill reflects upon the sacrifices that went into honoring Heber Valley's military heroes. KPCW's Amber Johnson has more on that.
Almost daily for 20 years, Terry Edwards made the one-mile pilgrimage up Memorial Hill in his vintage Jeep Commando. His vision for this Midway Mecca was to create a sacred place to memorialize local residents who served in the United States military. Today's pilgrims hike, bike, or drive to the summit. Some are there for the 360-degree view of the Edenic Valley framed by Mount Timpanogos. Others seek solace and connection with the past and present. On Monday from 6 to 8 a.m., many will participate in Memorial Day Murfer Meander, a punishing free CrossFit workout to honor military heroes. The hill rises 200 feet above the valley floor, accessed by a serpentine gravel road with a few memorial benches lining the route. American service and Utah flags wave skyward at the summit, where a bronze statue, the final salute, encapsulates a fallen soldier's empty combat boots, helmet, and rifle. The monument's construction was not by happenstance. It was the collective work of many people who raised funds, built structures, battled vandalism, and planted and hand-watered the bristled cone pine trees that will outlive us 1,000 years. Edwards is a Vietnam vet and calls Memorial Hill a special place. Etched on the black basalt plaques affixed to the memorial's travertine columns are the names of 2,000 soldiers. Some served as far back as the War of 1812. Others wore U.S. military uniforms more recently.
Dr. Green, he researched all the, it took him 20 or something years to research all those names that's on the hill now that's recorded of different wars, and they raised up some money, but they couldn't get any track. So I seen an ad in the paper, I don't know, it's about 1997 or something. They said, could anybody help us up there? So I got a hold of Mr. Kohler, and I had the money, and that's how I got involved. I built that arch over it, the gate.
That arch is the entryway to Memorial Hill, with signs that read, "Freedom is not free," and "All give some give all." German immigrant Daniel Ballstead was one who gave to the beautification of the hill. He has since passed, but his son Joseph said he remembers planting hundreds of trees and nurturing them throughout the hot summers with his dad. He said we had an old Volkswagen Squareback with a hitch that we connected a 500-gallon water tank to the back of that car. We'd fill it up and then siphon the water out of the tank and run the hoses to the different trees. It took hours to water them all. Joseph said his dad was born in Herne, Germany in 1909, and his family immigrated to the United States when he was 4 months old. He was a merchant marine who traveled the world and was involved in the cleanup efforts in Germany after World War II. Joseph said he can only imagine the what-ifs his father must have felt if they had not left Germany. He said his dad was so proud to be an American and taught each of his children about the many sacrifices that have been made for our freedoms and honoring those who serve. There was something different about his approach to those who laid everything on the line and gave their lives for our country. It was a different, sacred tone. Terry Edwards is now 82. There's a bench dedicated in his honor at the summit, but he doesn't like to talk about himself. He instead points to the legacy of those names engraved on the walls and has one wish for everyone who visits.
But I'd like them to show a little reverence when they drive or walk up there. The jewel of Wasatch County, you know, people don't quite understand how beautiful that place is. See the beauty of that Wasatch Timpanogos and the Wasatch Mountains, breathtaking. And to think those young men left to serve and willing to give up their life for the freedom of those people down below. I would think they would say once in a while, say, geez, I appreciate them guys.
Edwards has been on active duty in the fight for freedom.
And I was a combat veteran. I spent 14 months in Vietnam. I was in the bush. I was in the slush paddies. I was up in the mountains. You know, I know exactly what freedom means.
And that definition, as memorialized on the entrance gate to Memorial Hill, is that freedom is not free. This is Amber Johnson, KPCW News.
And banners honoring veterans are hanging on Heber City's Main Street. But as KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports, the city's banner policy has been a point of contention in recent years.
The city received too many banner requests to accommodate during the month of May, including the Heber Market on Main, the Soldier Hollow Sheepdog Competition, the High School Rodeo Finals, and more. But the veterans' banners require all 108 of the city's spots, with specific locations requested for each one. The applicant wanted them to hang uninterrupted from May 13th through May 28th, as Public Works Director Matthew Kennard explained during a city council meeting May 7th.
Whenever we have the veteran banners up, we're not able to put any other banners up, which looks extremely good, but it makes scheduling extremely difficult.
He proposed a compromise to give everyone's banners time to hang, including displaying the veteran banners for several days each around Armed Forces Day and Memorial Day, for a total of 10 days for the month. But not everyone agrees that's enough time. Pam Patrick spoke up during the city council meeting to say how important recognizing veterans is to her.
Veterans mean an awfully lot to me. My father, my brothers, my cousin, I've uncles.
The city also hangs the veteran banners for the 4th of July and Veterans Day. The Main Street banners have a contentious history in the city. Heber adopted a formal banner policy 4 years ago after LGBTQ pride-themed banners sparked pushback in June 2019. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, Tina Lewis, a longtime Parkite who helped grow Park City into a major tourist destination, has died. She died unexpectedly at home last Thursday. She was 78. Her husband, Jim Lewis, confirmed her death to KPCW on Friday. He said a cause of death is pending an autopsy. Lewis had been a resident of Park City since 1977, and she served the community throughout her life, from holding elected office to promoting the arts, skiing, and tourism. She was an exquisite seamstress and designer. She was first elected to the Park City Council in 1979 and served throughout the 1980s. She would go on to become the first full-time director of the Park City Arts Festival, now known as the Kimball Arts Festival. She also played a role in bringing the Sundance Film Festival and the 2002 Winter Olympics to town. She was instrumental in moving the historic Miners Hospital from its original location at the base of Park City Mountain Resort to where it stands today in City Park. She also organized that original Book Brigade. In 2023, Lewis was recognized by the Park City Chamber of Commerce with the Miles Radiman Spirit of Hospitality Award. That award is given annually to a community member who strives to make Park City a better place. At the time, former Chamber Executive Deb Travis Archer said that Lewis played a central role in raising the city's profile as a destination for conventions and vacations. Archer also said at the time that Lewis had a touch for organizing and designing that was commonly known as the Tina Touch. Lewis was also a one-time member of KPCW's Board of Trustees. Jim Lewis says that a service for his wife of 58 years is still being planned. Well, the Heber City Cemetery is running out of space, but it won't be cheap to expand. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on the city's plans.
City leaders say it's a priority to build a new columbarium, a structure used to store cremation urns, because the cemetery is reaching capacity. But council members suffered sticker shock when the responses to a request for bid proposals came back this spring, as City Manager Matt Brower explained.
Recall, at the end of March, we received four bids for our project. The lowest apparent bidder was about $2.1 million above our project budget of about $2.5 million. That's why we had so much interest in meeting with the contractors to find out if we could value engineer this project to bring those costs down.
The most expensive bid was more than $6 million. The columbarium will have just under 1,300 niches for urns. Brower says based on conversations with the contractors, he thinks the project costs could be reduced by $500,000 to $750,000. At a meeting Tuesday evening, the Heber City Council discussed where to adjust the design to make it more affordable. Brower recommended the council also borrow money from other city funds to help pay for the structure. The city expects revenue from selling spots in the columbarium will pay for the project over the next 5 to 10 years. The council considered whether to change certain building materials or phase aspects of the project, among other possible changes. Councilmember Yvonne Barney said, though she agrees with some changes to the design, she wants to be sure the construction is high quality.
I don't want us to have to go back in 50 years and redo everything and have, more expense. Let's get it right the first time and move on.
Councilmember Scott Phillips said the time is now to start building.
Park City's already scrambling. They don't have any cemetery spots left. Midway's running short from what I heard, right? So we're bringing a product to the market that people are going to demand.
The city council directed Brower to move forward with negotiating a contract with Jardine Lithgow Joint Venture. Council members decided on changes such as gravel instead of pavement in the courtyard, aluminum gutters instead of copper, and waiting to install a roundabout. Next, the contractor will bring back a new cost estimate based on those recommendations. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, in partnership with Protect Our Winters, Progression 2024 will be coming to Park City next month. On the phone with details, I have Ryan Bellamissimo. He's the venture capitalist with Private Family Office in Los Angeles. He's also the founder of Progression, which started last year. Good morning. Thanks for joining us, Ryan.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks. So why don't you start by telling us first what a venture capitalist does?
Yeah, absolutely. A venture capitalist is an investor that focuses earlier in the investment cycle, usually around the seed to Series B stage is generally what's considered venture. People can think for the general audience of Shark Tank. It's investing into startups earlier in their life cycle.
Okay. So give us a bit of background on this event that you started, Progression. I believe it's now in its second year.
Yep, exactly. So Progression started about a year ago. This is the inaugural event for Progression. So Progression 2024 is a conference that's focused on bringing mission-driven investing to the venture capital cycle. So currently, Protect Our Winters, they focus most of the resources on legislation and lobbying for the clean energy transition in DC. But we wanted to be able to allow them to engage in the private sector and to put their brand and their stamp of approval on companies earlier in the investment cycle that are in the need of this spotlight. And these companies are in the need of the spotlight because they're all fundraising. So we've worked with Protect Our Winners to select six companies, also with the help of the Rocky Mountain Venture Capital Association, who are all in the midst of fundraising. They're going to be coming to Park City to present and give potential investors and climate advocates the opportunity to support them and even potentially invest if they're interested.
Yeah, so how did this partnership with PAL start?
Yeah, so this partnership with PAL and the event in general started from, again, Progression is a venture capital oriented conference that looks for nonprofits to allow to engage with the venture capital ecosystem. So Protect Our Winters is a nonprofit that previously, they have tons of corporate partnerships, but they had never engaged with putting their spotlight on companies, particularly in the midst of fundraising like they are now. So with this event, we're always looking, Progression 2025 will look for a new nonprofit and we'll be partnered with a different philanthropic cause that we can link back to venture capital stage companies.
All right. So as I mentioned, the event is coming to Park City. Why did you choose Park City?
Park City, because we are partnered with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Team. So the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Team is a big partner of Protect Our Winners, and they want to increase their climate initiatives. So they've decided to host us at the Center of Excellence, which is right in town. That's why this event, it's very accessible to our audience here today. This event is completely free. And again, being hosted from 2:30 to 10 p.m., all at the Center of Excellence right in Park City.
All right, so anybody's welcome to come?
Yes, anyone's welcome to come. We wanted to make this event extremely accessible to the Park City community and to any supporters of Protect Our Winners, members of the Rocky Mountain Venture Capital Association, or just local investors or folks that are interested in general in supporting climate and supporting early stage investment. And if they're interested in venture capital and hearing some startups come to Park City and their area to talk, we'd love to host them for the event.
Okay, so this is happening June 13th?
Yes, so it's June 13th. In the event, we have a full day of programming. It's from 2:30 to 10 p.m. And the event's gonna start with a welcoming reception. And then we have, as I mentioned, six company presentations, all in the midst of fundraising. And then we also have a inspiring list of speakers and panelists. We have the Future of Clean Energy Investing panel that's being hosted by RSM US. And on this panel, we have Jam Atari, who's the managing partner of Pathway Power. We have Kirsten Suddeth, who's the GP of Next Frontier Capital, and she focuses on their climate practice. And we have Tom Georges, who's the head of University of Utah's Energy Accelerator. And beyond that, those panelists, we also, as I mentioned, have some other featured speakers. We have our keynote speaker for the evening, Amy Enger-Bretson, who is a professional ski mountaineer, and she was also the Protect Our Winners Athlete Alliance Member of the Year for 2021. So she has been a huge part of their advocacy and campaigns program. And then separately, we have Park City local and U.S. Senate candidate Caroline Gleick coming to speak at the event. So as I'm sure you know, Leslie, Caroline is a huge climate activist, and she recently won the Democratic nomination for Utah. And we as a former Protect Our Winners athlete, with her campaign being really focused on the clean energy transition for Utah, we feel that she's a great voice to come speak at our event.
All right. So is that what it takes? Just more money into solutions here?
I think it's, you know, there has certainly been an influx of capital into climate-oriented solutions over the past couple of years, particularly with things like the Inflation Reduction Act and legislation that has been introduced to make it economical to invest into these areas. But at the end of the day, you know, the investment into these technologies is still, in my view, pretty siloed. You know, we have investment focused on, concentrated on particular areas that, you know, might have stronger returns, but we need a more diverse approach. And in order to produce that, we want to bring voices that don't have a financial interest at play to the conversation. So that's what we're trying to enable by allowing someone like a Protect Our Winners to signal to venture capitalists where this money should be going. So in short, there is money in there. There's dry powder in the sector, but we need to direct it more towards companies that, you know, a nonprofit or someone that doesn't have a financial interest at play feels are really the companies that will drive forward the mission of the future.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we hear the storms that we're seeing, the tornadoes, the you know, just these odd climate happenings. Is it becoming more real as people kind of see what's happening on the nightly news?
Yeah, I think every day we're continuing to see the real effects of climate change. And we're going to continue until we as a society and, you know, as a world come together and prioritize these solutions. And I think, again, through progression, we're trying to engage with the private sector and bring different voices to the conversation here. So we have these nonprofits, we have investors and venture capitalists, and we have political leaders like a Caroline Gleick, all coming to the conversation and putting a spotlight on young companies that are in need of attention and fundraising, that all of these stakeholders really feel will move forward the needle in the clean energy transition.
Yeah, so what's your personal interest in this? just being
I currently work day to day in climate tech, environmental, venture capitalism. That's so for the private family office I work for, that's our focus generally. So I've seen how there hasn't been an avenue for nonprofits that don't engage, as I mentioned, in venture capital, because you usually see nonprofits go after larger Fortune 500 partnerships, right? A Protect Our Winners will partner with, an REI, Patagonia, a larger visibility organization. However, there can be plenty of downstream effects, and this is something that I realized that nonprofits can have by developing these corporate partnerships a lot earlier on in their life cycle. That was a thesis I wanted to continue to pursue. And by working with the Protect Our Winners team, it incubated into this style of event. And we're really excited to be able to provide this platform in the future for nonprofits to engage in venture, to put a spotlight on companies that they think are really going to move the needle forward.
Okay. How does somebody register? I mean, is there still time to register?
Yep, absolutely. So there's limited spots available. So I do encourage all folks interested to go register today. Registration is going to close on June 7th. So there's about a week of registration left. But currently, it's a completely free event. So there's no charge. There is we have a post-pitch dinner reception hosted by High West Distillery and Founders and Funders. So it's going to be a fully catered event. Anyone interested in coming out, the event's going to run from 2:30 to 10 p.m., but register now to reserve your free spot.
And how do you pull this off at no cost?
We've got plenty of great sponsors supporting us, and including, Protect Our Winners, obviously being one of our large partners for the event, Rocky Mountain Venture Capital Association, the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Team, Freshwater Advisors, Founders and Funders, Forecaster, Wasatch Audio and Video, High West Distillery, of course. So we've got a great group of partners, sponsors, all coming together to make this event a reality. And again, to invite the Park City community to come together to listen to these amazing startups.
All right. Now, what are you hoping somebody gets out of this?
We really hope that these startups will have some meaningful conversations with potential investors, and more than anything, get a spotlight on their fundraising process, so that they can potentially advance that in a meaningful way, whether that's at Progression or with the media coverage from Progression after from other investors.
Okay. Ryan, anything else you want to tell us?
I think you asked all the questions, Leslie. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
It's Ryan Bellissimo, again, a venture capitalist who will be bringing Progression 2024 to Park City June 13th. Well, in the studio now with an update from the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau is CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Leslie.
First, let's just start with your takeaway from this year's Wasatch Back Economic Summit. Again, sold out, full house. Why all the interest?
I think we need a larger space to accommodate everybody. I think there's just a lot going on in the region and a lot of opportunity to partner and collaborate on issues that are just bigger than ourselves. And we need to show that we're collaborating and partnering. And there really is so much happening in the counties and in the communities where we're working together, and a lot of opportunities to celebrate some of the wins that we've had related to transit and transportation, some of the wonderful grants that we've received for open space, and just really talk about now how can we leverage some of those great strengths and opportunities and address some of the challenges that are really not easy challenges and will need our entire region, including the state, to help us navigate.
Yeah, and I don't know if you really had an opportunity to sit and listen. I mean, did you take something away from it?
I did, yeah. I was in the elected officials panel. So I did most of the work really behind the scenes in the planning part to make sure that we had the right sessions and the right panelists and that the panelists were prepared. The elected officials panel, we moved back to the lunchtime keynote because it's so popular and Melina and Tana did such a great job representing Summit County and the city and what our issues are and some of our big wins. And it was really interesting to learn about what's happening in Heber and Wasatch County, especially related to growth and development and transit. But I also served on a panel for the regional tourism marketing and management breakout, which was popular. We had our Utah Office of Tourism managing director, Natalie Randall, there. And Dallin spoke about what they're doing in Wasatch County and Heber for marketing. And it's really interesting as we think about how we're marketing our communities, how we need to be working together regionally to market the entire Wasatch back, and working together, riding the coattails of the Utah Office of Tourism. So it was a great event. It was sold out. I think it sold out in the first 2 weeks. We'd really love to get it to a larger venue. Right now we're talking to the Grand Hyatt at Deer Valley East. I think they will be able to accommodate about 500 people. So we'll ultimately, if we're able to move there and make that the permanent home, we'll be able to accommodate more than double what we're able to accommodate today. And I know that would be really great for the community.
Okay. Let's have a look at the lodging data as of April 30th. What have you seen?
Well, as we were, you know, watching sort of spring, winter end and coming into spring, we knew that there was some softening happening in April specifically. And right now, as of April 30th, we are seeing that our average occupancy is down almost 17%. So volume of visitation is down quite significantly. Same with those average daily rates. Those are also down for April. We are seeing a really nice spike for May. May right now is ahead of pace about 12%, which is really good news. But some severe softening again for June, July, and August. Right now, pace for June, July, and August is down about 15%. And overall, summer is looking down off of pace about 10%. So we have some opportunity to recover, a lot of that, and Tani Hansen mentioned it when we were at our county council presentation last week. We talked a little bit about that booking window and how visitors are really booking closer to their stay. So we do anticipate some good recovery, although we don't expect to be much higher than last summer. I think we'll be happy if we finish the summer flat. But we have hit the ground running with our marketing campaign.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna get back to that. What you told the Summit County Council, yeah. So, but I wanted to ask you about March. I mean, with occupancy down by almost 17%. I mean, are you a bit surprised by that? I mean, we had some great snow.
Yeah, well, actually, when we're looking at the occupancy, we are looking, March was actually up about 6%, and April was down about 17%. You know, I think overall, when we look at the winter season, we did finish the winter season, so the last 6 months was virtually flat. Looking at the 6 months of winter, we finished at 47% occupancy, which is exactly flat compared to last year, which I actually think is a win considering the record-breaking amount of snowfall that we had last winter. So I think that's positive looking back those last 6 months. Average daily rates were also flat. So overall, a really solid winter season. Where we are seeing the softness is really in the next 6 months.
All right, so I mean, again, we also see, while we see some of the visitation down, we are seeing the average daily rate go up. Is this what the sustainable tourism plan is all about, though? Is that what it's supposed to do?
We do talk a lot about quality over quantity, especially when we're targeting our marketing efforts. Well, we want to make sure that we're attracting the type of visitor who comes to Park City, stays longer, spends more, and we're seeing that. You know, when you look at the Summit County tax collections, which I have as of April, and keep in mind that those April numbers reflect February. I think the best way really to look at these Summit County tax collections is in the aggregate rather than in the monthly number. So when you look at the first 4 months of 2024, sales tax collections are up 9%. Transient room taxes are up 6%. Restaurant taxes are up 6%. And same with the recreation, arts, and parks taxes, also up 6%. So yes, we may be seeing a little less volume in terms of overnight visitation, but those visitors that are coming are spending significantly more when they're in our community.
So any concern, though, that we price ourselves out of the market? I mean, and I say that looking at what happened with Sundance. It just got too expensive.
Mm-hmm. We're always looking at that, right? We want to be a destination that is accessible, that's down to earth, that's friendly, that's really authentic to who we are. And we do have a good mix of product in our community. We tend to utilize the Destametrics reports, which generally lean towards the larger properties, the less traditional types of properties. But we are going to begin incorporating some of the more traditional properties into our reporting mix so we can get a better idea of that overall average.
So speaking of Sundance, any news there? I mean, I know you serve on a committee.
We do. We have a working committee that's working extremely hard in responding to the RFP. We're so grateful for the leadership of Sarah Pierce and our city officials, along with Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, all coming to the table to work together on a joint effort to keep Sundance in Park City, Summit County, and all of Utah.
So did Salt Lake City County file an RFP?
We're working together on a joint effort.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And then real quick, I mean, what are the downfalls of losing Sundance? I mean, a few years ago, we had a restaurant owner tell us that every night is Sundance, you know, with just the increased skier numbers.
You know, when we look at the data, the economic impact solely from Sundance is on par to a Christmas week or a festive week. So we don't reach those numbers on an average week in the winter. It's a very special time frame. And we don't want to lose Sundance. Not only the economic impact that it brings to our community, but also the opportunity for cultural exchange and the exchange of ideas. And Sundance is such an integral part of our brand identity, of who we are as Park City and really all of Utah. And it's very important to me personally and to our organization that we do everything that we can to keep Sundance in Utah.
All right. Since we last talked, the Chamber has released its new brand and logo and introduced a new concept known as Mountain Kind. So why was it time for something new?
Well, I'm not sure if you're aware or if the listeners are aware, but our logo, which we lovingly called Piney, it was a pine cone, that was actually over 20 years old. It had some reinventions over those 20 years, but always very, very similar. And as we were going through the Global Sustainable Tourism Council assessment and the development of the Sustainable Tourism Plan, and really this shift and focus on destination marketing and management, and these really bold ambitions related to sustainable tourism, we felt that it was time that we also looked at our own identity and how we're presenting our community in the world. So as we started thinking about that, we recognized that we generally in the past had two very strong campaigns. We would focus on a winter campaign and a summer campaign. We had our winter's favorite town campaign, which many people thought was our brand, but in reality it was really only good for just a few months of the year. And we love winter's favorite town. It's certainly a phrase that we will continue to use, but we really wanted something that represented our community year round and something that represented these bold ideas related to sustainable tourism. And we really love the concept of Mountain Kind. We feel that it reflects our community, our artists, our athletes, our Olympic heritage, and our legacy, our nod to our mining history and our active lifestyle. And we're hearing from our locals that they really resonate, that they believe that they are the mountain kind. You know, our thought was we wanted something that represented our love of the mountains, our love of the environment, our desire to protect the environment, and also the kindred spirits that come together in a community like Park City.
Well, the grammar geeks out there love that the fact that it's a vowel, a verb, noun, and adjective as well.
Well, we love the idea of being able to use it to help educate visitors when they're in our community as well. That's a really important expanded effort that we focused on in the last several years, and making sure that we're influencing visitor behavior in a way that really celebrates the positive impacts, but also works really hard to mitigate potentially traffic and congestion and other pinch points that our residents feel related to tourism.
And you're getting a good response from it then?
We are, yes.
All right. Let's see. The Chamber holding its Board of Directors election. When will we have results?
Well, ballots will go out May 30th. So this week, the ballots will go out. There'll be 10 people on the ballot for 5 seats that are available. Those top 5 vote-getters will serve a 4-year term. And we have a great slate of candidates that we'll be presenting. We want to make sure that we have a really good mix of the types of businesses represented, the types of industry, the types of people. And I think our nominating committee did a great job of putting together a great selection of candidates. And those ballots will go out May 30th. People will have about 2 weeks to vote, and then the slate of candidates will be approved at our June board meeting to be seated at our first meeting in July.
Okay, so everybody who's a member of the chamber gets one vote?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Also, just want to make note that you've got a couple of upcoming events, so save the date. The Oakley Rotary Rodeo and Barbecue, this is for chamber members as well?
We do. We have the July 3rd, the Oakley Rodeo. It's the opening day of the rodeo. We'll do a special legislative event in conjunction with Summit County during that event. And we'll also be doing a lottery for members who are interested in attending. You may not know, but the rodeo is already sold out. So I think we might be the best chance for our members to possibly get tickets for the rodeo. Registration and lottery information will go out in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. And then Friday, November 1st is the date for the tourism fall form. This is when the next Miles Radiman Spirit of Hospitality?
Actually, the Miles Radiman Spirit of Hospitality Award is given out at our annual meeting that will happen in the summer. And I would like to take a moment just to recognize and send our deep condolences out to the family and friends of Tina Lewis. What a sad loss for our community. Last week, Tina was awarded our Spirit of Hospitality Miles Radiman Award last year at our annual meeting, and actually was the first person to be featured in our Placemaker series. We are standing on Tina's shoulders, and we're so grateful for all she did for our community. She will be deeply missed.
All right, Jen, we'll see you next month. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Jennifer Wesselhoff, CEO of the Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau.